I am continuing our series on Jesus speaking today, and I have the pleasure, Jesus and economics, come on, what a great title. I can see you're all going to start glazing over already. I promise you that I will try and keep this as entertaining as I physically possibly can. And but you know, this topic impacts us all. The whole title of economics you might think goes over your head, but it doesn't. You all run budgets at home. I think you probably do. You might not, but you should do. You know, you all know how much income you earn and how much you spend. And sometimes you go overdrawn. No, some people are good at this, aren't they? And so the thing is that things just get bigger and bigger and bigger. It starts with the income and expenditure that you might have in the house. It might move on to a company who has income and expenditure over a business. And then it moves to a country that has income and expenditure for the nation. And the figures just get bigger and bigger. But it's the same principles. And so, let's see if it's going to behave. But before I want to talk about this topic, I'd like to ask you a few questions. Because you might not realize, but this topic goes deep into the heart of each one of us. It really does. And I've had great time looking at all of figures and bits and pieces, but I'm not going to bore you with all of that because I want you to stay with me. All right? And so my question to you before I start this topic is, what do you treasure? What do you treasure? Well done, Andy. You'll get brownie points for that. He turned and, you know, put his hand on Lee. So, where do you find your identity? Or in what do you trust? Because economics, this is the only boring slide, I promise you. The production, consumption, and transfer of wealth. So that's how the dictionary would describe it, or the condition of a region or group or as regards to material prosperity. So let's look at the first one, the production, consumption, and the transfer of wealth. We all have jobs. We all work for companies that do stuff. Well, we might not now, Chris, but you used to. Yeah. You can... okay. I won't go there. No, that's all right, Chris. Don't worry. I love you. The production, consumption, and the transfer of wealth. It might not. You might not work, but you all buy stuff. You all eat food, and you all want things. We all have houses, or we might rent. It's all in together. And B, the condition of a regional group as regards material prosperity. You know, just for a second, I'll try not to bore you this. I went on to our government website, and you can go on to, I didn't realize this, but if you Google the Office of Public, is it the OBR, Public Responsibility or Budget Responsibility, yeah, you can see how the government spends and receives the income that they get and how they spend it. They document it all. And I'd suggest you do it. Who's looking forward to the 26th of November? Who? Hands up. So that's a complete no one. No. And, yeah, very true. But doesn't that tell you something? Doesn't that tell you something? I think we need to pray for this nation. You know, we need to pray for good governance. We need to pray for the people that run our finance in this nation. I mean, I went on to the figures, and just to say two things. This nation, we are, up until the 5th of April, we were running a deficit of about £137 billion. Ouch. Ouch, that's not just a couple of takeaways, is it? Yeah, we're running a big budget, and obviously Rachel Reeves has got a difficult job to do. Got a very difficult job to do. And, you know, the other thing is that we run a national debt that is something like 96.6% of our income. So if I earn £30,000, I've got a credit card debt of £28,800 that never goes down. The government try and reduce it, but then they borrow a bit more and it just stays kind of, it's probably been climbing up. I didn't really look at the past history. But that's worrying, isn't it? That we have a debt that's almost the same as our income that just never seems to decline. And so we need to pray for our nation, pray that God blesses our nation. You know, we pray about seeking the prosperity of a city, but we want to see our nation prosper, don't we? So, let's look at the Bible. I think that's the best place to start. We don't have the Office of Budget Responsibility in the Bible. Yeah, it's not there, sorry. But we do have good practice. Let me see what we've got here. Oh, going the wrong way. Okay, I'll come back to that in a minute. So, what I thought, I spent hours looking at this. I hope you get the fruit of this benefit. But I thought I'll start in Genesis, but I'm not going to go all the way through for you. But work and reward is God's idea. Yeah, sometimes you might not like it. You know, sometimes going to work doesn't feel quite brilliant. But it's God's idea. We see in Genesis, God creating mankind and putting Adam in the garden to work and take care of it. So that's two aspects, work and responsibility to stewardship. That's what we have. That's our fundamental birthright, to take care. And God gave Adam and Eve everything in the garden, everything, animals and birds, every seed-bearing plant and tree-bearing fruit. God gave them everything. Everything. And I don't think it was just a small allotment. It would have been massive. God gave them everything. That's our generous God. And he set them to work. And we see the first time that people come to God with the fruit of their labors. We see Cain and Abel coming to God. The first time, Abel was a shepherd and Cain was a farmer. And both of them bring their first fruits to God. And we see Abel being blessed by God, being his offering acceptable. And Cain, God isn't quite so happy with him. And I don't think it was because he gave God a funny-shaped potato or some dodgy marrow from his allotment or from his garden. It wasn't that. It was God was looking at his heart. And God's response to Cain was, if you do what is right, will you not be accepted? So God expects us, and God expected him, in the way that we live and work, to work in a way that is acceptable to him. So how we work is important to God. And you know, in this topic of, I said I wasn't going to bore you, but I hope not. You know, come back to me if you feel. Go on, thank you. I found this really interesting article. You might not agree, but I thought it was. And it was It was by this chap called, or these two chaps called Manuel Jose and Charles Moore, The Development of Taxation in the Bible. Now, what a good read. I was fascinated. I thought it was a great article. And do you realize that taxation goes back for thousands of years? I mean, that adage, things you rely on, death and taxes, true. Anyway, we know this story about Joseph, don't we? Joseph and the amazing dream coat. Yeah? Thank you, Grant. Joseph gets sold into slavery by his brothers, and he's sold it to Egypt, and he gets put in prison, released out of prison, and he rises through the dreams about the 7 years of prosperity and 7 years of famine to become Pharaoh's chancellor. Would you believe that? He is Pharaoh's right-hand man. He's like the Rachel Reeves of Pharaoh. Egypt couldn't do anything without Joseph's say-so. So what does he do? Anyone know? Well done, Penny. He levies a tax of 20% on everything. I mean, on everything. We don't get any personal allowances, you know, everything. A fifth of produce, Genesis 47:26, a fifth of produce now belongs to Pharaoh. Well, thank you, Joseph. Yeah? But by the grace of God, that he produced so much produce that he lost count. He could no longer count the amount of grain that he was taxing the poor people of Egypt. But yet, when the famine came, they had more than enough. So God isn't against taxes, amazingly. But God helped Joseph to be a great manager at the highest level. He went from a prisoner to being at the highest point of a nation. How amazing is that? How amazing is that? So when Israel left Egypt, what did they do? They reduced the tax from 20% to 10%. So in the Bible, we find the tithe. And this was a tax on land produce and livestock to support the Levites, the ministers at the tabernacle, and then for the temple. A tithe of everything from the land. It belonged to the Lord. But God is a great God, isn't he? He looks after everybody. So in Deuteronomy 26, we see the Israelites were commanded to bring some of their first fruits of all their produce, everything that they produced, to be given for the benefit of the priests, the aliens, that's the foreigners who weren't born in the land, the orphans and the widows. Our God is a generous God, isn't he? He takes care of the widows, the orphans, those people that are not from the land. And we see this generosity of God to make provision for the poor and the alien, also in Leviticus, by not harvesting to the very edges of their fields. So they were commanded in Leviticus, when they harvested a field, when the farmers came along, they'd leave the edges of the field for the poor people and for the aliens so that they could glean and have food. And we see this in the book of Ruth, where Boaz, a rich farmer, he makes provision for Ruth, a foreigner, in this way. And she gets grain and lives. And you might know the story of Ruth and Naomi. But then not only does Boaz get a wife, because Ruth becomes his wife, but their child becomes part of the line of the king of David. So God takes a foreigner, provides for them, but then brings her into his plans for the nation and for the line of David. God is an amazing God. Who knows what he will do with acts of generosity? Who knows? God is such a gracious God. So what about business? I found this slide. The Lord in Proverbs. This is we're going to look at the Old Testament a little bit. How long have we got? 10 minutes. Look at the Old Testament and then we'll look at Jesus. Proverbs 11 verse 1. The Lord detests dishonest scales, but accurate weights find favor with him. So honesty in business is important. Honesty in business. Honesty in the workplace is important. I don't know about you, but I worked in financial services for 23 years. And I always had to account for every penny. Every penny had to be accounted for. If anybody made a mistake, which happened occasionally, you know, we'd buy the I'll say it wasn't me, honest gov. If one of our teams bought the wrong fund by accident, they'd buy an accumulation unit rather than an income unit, or they'd do something, we had to spot it so quickly and bring it to the attention of our bosses so it could be corrected. And people, you know, they're not that forgiving in business if you make mistakes, believe it or not. And so it's important that we, as Christians, as believers, we can demonstrate that we are honest and have a high integrity. And so Proverbs like this, you might think, well, you know, it runs all the way from a small job up to the highest chief executive. Honesty in business, so important. And in Matthew, we have a couple of stories. Oh, sorry. It goes. Look, Matthew talks about a couple of stories where the master goes away, but he puts in charge, his servants in charge, and he asks them to look after their household. And this is about a faithful and wise servant who looks after the people under him. So this is a good manager, effectively, a good manager. He looks after those people who are under his care whilst the big boss is away. Because when the big boss comes back, if he's done anything wrong, if you read the rest of the parable, then he's for it. And this is what the manager or God comes back and says, who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them the food at the proper time? He looks after his employees. It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing well. So when he returns, truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. Honesty and integrity in business. Being a good man manager. The Bible has it all. And then in Matthew 25, we have the story of the talents that you'd all know about, where God gives his servants gives one servant five talents, one servant two talents, and another servant one talent. And then he goes away and he comes back, and the one who's made five talents has made another five. Now, I've looked at how much a talent was, and some people say that it was a couple of £100, and others say it was, in today's money, might have been about £20,000. So it's a bit hard to find out a real sum. But whether or not it's a few hundred or quite a number of £1,000, we have the faithful servant who's just steadily working, who the master can trust and goes away and brings back his interest or return and lays it before the Father. Faithful in what he's doing. And God expects us to be like that. You know, as I said before, I worked for 23 years in finance, and you know, it was important for us. For me, I never focused on commissions or fees, even though we had to bring those in, because for me, it was all about doing a good job. If I thought I'd do a good job, then the finance would look after itself. And most of the time, it did. Yeah, every once in a while, my bosses would come back and they'd want blood out of a stone, but we won't go into that. But that's the nature of bosses for you. But, you know, God was good. And, you know, it's amazing that God blessed me, and I'm sure that he will bless you in that. So what about Jesus? You know, I don't know about you, but I like to think outside the box as far as Jesus is concerned, because when it comes to money, we know that Jesus didn't search after finance or material wealth. But I was thinking about the first miracle that Jesus did, which is when he turned water into wine. Yeah, and I love this parable. I'll try and keep to time, I promise. I love this parable because, for me, the first miracle that Jesus did, where he turns water into wine, is for me one of the greatest miracles. I know you can't quite, you know, they're all miracles and they're all great, but this is the first time for me you see in the Bible where Jesus turns nothing or water into something that's amazing. Yeah, there's nothing in water that would ever turn it into wine. And Jesus does that. And I love this parable for another reason. This is a quick digression. It's because the first time for me, I see Jesus with a bit of a grumpy attitude. I'm going to get told off for that. I know I will. But, you know, he's at the wedding and the wine runs out. And Jesus' mother turns to him and said, "They've run out of wine." And Jesus turns around to his mum and say, "Woman, what has that got to do with me?" You know, I look at that and I think, it's great when you, don't you just love it when your mum interferes with something? Where, you know, Jesus has got an interfering mum. Sorry, mums everywhere. But, you know, it's just, "Mum, leave me alone." I am on dodgy ground. I better move on quickly. But, you know, I can understand Jesus in that. Sometimes I don't have the best attitude, you know, and I kind of think, I think that's great, that attitude, Jesus. I love it. Anyway, coming back to the story, just imagine if Jesus woke up one day and he said to the Father, "Do you know, Nicky Lark, I'm going to take a sabbatical." Very good, man. You know, I'd really like to just, I had a great wedding the other day. I really enjoyed making that wine. I'm going to become a winemaker. I'm just gonna spend my time making wine." But do you realize in that miracle, there were 6 stone jars with 20 to 30 gallons of water in each. And I did the sums. That's between 600 and 900 bottles of wine. Yeah? That's a lot of wine. Yeah? I don't know how long it'd take you to any person or group to drink that amount of wine. But let's say it was a fairly good bottle of wine, at £25 equivalent in our money per bottle. Do you realize how much money Jesus could make from selling that wine? Yeah? That's almost £1 million if he did that every week. Just one event every week. That's £1 million. Yeah. So let's say he woke up one day and he didn't want to make wine. He wanted to make bread. Yeah. We know what he did with the feeding of the 4,000 and the feeding of the 5,000. All he'd have to do is just get up one morning, make 5 loaves, and then get his disciples in. Right, go off and sell those. I worked that out. £3.75 a loaf. Yeah, that's £243,000. If he did that once a week. Yeah. If he was a doctor, and said, I'm going to take a break from this ministry. I'm just going to heal the sick and charge for it. I don't think there'd have been any limit on the amount of money that he could have raised. But he didn't, did he? I'm going to try not to get emotional at this point, because I think that he could have been the richest man that ever walked this planet. If he'd have just not done what the Father wanted him to do, but wanted to just thought, I'll just take a break for a while and do what I think. He could have been undoubtedly the richest man on the planet. But he didn't. So what does that tell us about Jesus? The man could have been the richest man in the world, but who did not actively pursue wealth or possessions. Yeah? God's economy is different to our economy. I don't think the Father needs a new watch. He doesn't need a Tesla or a BMW. He doesn't need a house in the country. The Father already owns everything. He owns everything. But what does the Father treasure the most? He treasures you and I. That is God's treasured possession. God loves you and I. And he sends his son, who could have had anything on the planet, who could have been the best at anything on the planet, so that you and I could know him. But even more than that, Philippians 2, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God to be something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. How amazing is that? The man who could have been the richest, the most gifted, as far as we're concerned, laid it all aside and became nothing so that he could lead us back to the Father. Luke 12:15 says that a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And I know I've been talking about, this is a talk about economics. And I could have gone about how we are stewards of the world, how we're supposed to care for things. You know, how we're supposed to be diligent in how things are made and distributed. And how we're supposed to look after our finances. But I felt the Lord wanted us to just to look at these questions. And so I started I'll leave that one up as I draw to a close. What do you treasure? You know, this is a challenge for us all. Where do you find your identity? Because if your identity is found in your car, in your house, in your job, in your relationships, If your identity is achieved somehow in what you have done, then when those things get taken away, your identity will plummet. And it's a challenge for us all. But if your identity is received, it's received from Jesus. And what that means is that you know that you've been adopted into God's family, that you know that you're a citizen of heaven, and you know that you're united to Christ. Our identity has to be based on Jesus and what he has done for us and what he says about us. Because I don't know about you, at some point in your life you'll face a difficulty. Some point of your life you'll mess up or things will just go wrong. But God's identity in us supersedes every mistake that you've ever made and will ever make. God's love for you is greater than anything you own. And if we can seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, then God will give us everything that we need. Thank you.